Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I'd love to chat today about a very important topic. And that is, because we've talked so much in recent episodes about privacy, digital forensics, encryption, proving reality, proving that something is AI generated or the opposite. And today I'd like to talk about the law regarding recordings around the world or non-disclosed recordings. So we talked in a previous episode about recording phone calls on Android and how over the past few years, manufacturers, the big manufacturers like Samsung and OnePlus, that actually cumulatively operate hundreds of millions of devices around the world that are based on derivatives of Android, right? They typically roll out their own sort of derivative OS with a few tweaks and a lot of bloatware frequently. And they've kind of taken away that feature. It was retired very quietly. Now, I have to say, I think that's disappointing because whether the user uses, you know, you can use your phone without any of these features in ways that are arguably law abiding or not. But by taking away that feature, it's made it a lot more complicated to record phone calls. The audio is encrypted and et cetera. But there's another type of recording that is just as useful, if not more so, and that is the ability to record things in person. I recently had an experience of this and reminded me why I believe it is an essential tool in certain circumstances. I mentioned the great roof leak began after Christmas. I was sleeping and I said, am I dreaming or is there drops of water on my head? And it was not a vivid dream. There was actually drops of water on my head. There was a leak from the roof, unfortunately, just above our bed. So over the course of the next 2 weeks, we emailed our landlord on the same day. It spread across the roof. Then there was mold. And as an asthmatic, it got to the point that I said, there's no way I can sleep in this anymore. Whether the landlord does anything or not, I'm not putting my health on the line. So I began sleeping on the couch. And until last night, I have remained my wife and I have remained sleeping between the couch and relatives. It's honestly been a kind of a nightmare. But at this point, when the landlord finally agreed to visit, I had enough reason to think that this was not a very nice or considerate person to just leave this and blame, you know, the other people. So I decided that it would be prudent to record the landlord visit. And no special James Bond tools required for this. I just used a recording app on my phone and positioned it tactically for anyone doing this with the microphone facing up, so inverting the phone call and just have your phone just popping out of your pocket. That's my tip, and that really the microphone position will make a huge difference. You really want to make sure the microphone has clear line of sight of the room, let's say. So it proved to be a very important decision because the landlord, when he came, this is very clear on audio, crystal clear, in fact, said, you know, this is, we'll remediate this in days. I'm on it. And I even said, do you want to see the apartment? And it was just a normal conversation. The next day, my wife and I got an email that was honestly terrifying for us, saying that I'm not going to do anything. It's for the remediation for the room. There was already drilled holes. It's not my problem. It's someone else's fault. And you've been, you know, very unpleasant tenants. And I was very disappointed by the condition of the apartment. So I think it's very useful to have the recording because we recorded him saying, I'm going to do something. I even recorded him saying, do you want to see the apartment? And him saying, no, it's fine. And I recorded us having a nice civil conversation. So while it might upset or, you know, be against some people's conception of privacy to record someone like this, this was a reminder to me of why in certain circumstances, I think it's very good that the law provides this one-party consent system. One-party consent means that in this example of there being two parties, this is in Israel here, I'm consent to the recording. The other party doesn't consent to it or isn't aware of that it's even happening. There are certain exemptions in Israel made for where even the one party rule doesn't apply. There's one very specific one that civil servants can't record one another, which would kind of defeat the cohesion of government. And that in a marital dispute, if it's used in bad faith to dig up dirt on the other person, so to speak, it mightn't be admissible. But the general principle is that it is. And there have been discussions to change this. I did my research on this topic last night, as you guys might be able to tell. It last came up really in 2016, where Prime Minister Netanyahu, then as now the Prime Minister, talked about making Israel a two-party jurisdiction. And that is basically the rough delineation of how this law works internationally. You have some jurisdictions like Germany, for example, where what I did recording the landlord would be a violation of the law. It could be an imprisonable offense, in fact. In Germany, however, it's also illegal for a landlord to just turf you out on the street or renew your or end your contract in vengeance. So in different jurisdictions, they approach things differently. So in Israel, I would say we're relatively permissive regarding the law here and relatively, you know, have a fairly limited conception of civil rights in other respects. But doing a landscape of where this is legal and not is interesting, because not only is there that delineation between one party and two party, that's a very basic way of looking at it. There's also a lot of nuances between countries and how they actually, how this law is actually provided. I would say I mentioned that when I was looking for a voice recorder recently, upgrading my 10-year-old one, and finding that these are not kind of your go-to gear anymore for just about anyone except for seemingly private investigators. There was a point I remember when at press conferences, all the journalists just popped their phone up on the wherever the person was speaking instead of the trusty DVR. Although you'll still see them, but they're kind of legacy tech. But for private investigators, PIs, they remain workhorses just because they kind of last. They'll record forever. They tend to have decent microphones, so they're very useful in that context. But when looking for my new DVR that's on the way from Sony, I was astounded by the number of, and we talked about this in another podcast, private investigator and spy supply stores in this country in Israel. And I'm guessing it's probably a reflection of the fact that one party recording is legal, that it creates an industry that mightn't have existed otherwise. Worth pointing out, just for a full discussion of this, that the law regarding one party consent in Israel is actually governed under the framework of a 1979 law about wiretapping. And wiretapping might sound like something that the FBI do back in the day, you know, they tap a phone line, but it's actually an offense that can be done without any wiretapping if you have zero party consent. So if you just put a hidden microphone in a room and you're not party to the conversation, just to clarify, in Israel, you've broken the law, and there is actually quite severe penalties under statute law. So it's not that we have a blanket, you know, ever it all goes, but some things go here that don't in other jurisdictions. Herman and Corin, I'd love to chat today about the law internationally regarding this question of recording consent. I've argued the point that in certain cases, it's an important legal right to defend, while other people might take a very different view and say that it's always a deceptive practice that breaks fundamental trust between people in a conversation. Herman and Corin, let's have a legal landscape of the law about recording and where is it legal, where is it illegal, and what other differences do we see in how different countries approach this topic. Over to you, Herman and Corin.
You know, Herman, I was thinking about that roof leak Daniel was dealing with. There is nothing quite like being woken up by a cold drip on your forehead in the middle of the night to make you question everything about your living situation.
It is the ultimate betrayal of the home, Corn. The one place you are supposed to be dry and warm, and suddenly, the sky is participating in your sleep schedule. Herman Poppleberry at your service, by the way. And yeah, Daniel was telling me about that recording he made of the landlord. It really got me thinking about how much we rely on these digital receipts now.
Exactly. It is a fascinating intersection of technology and law. Daniel mentioned he used a recording app on his phone. positioned it just right, and captured the landlord promising to fix things, only to have the landlord completely flip the script in an email the next day. "It is a classic," he said. "She said, except one side has a high-definition audio file."
And that is where the rabbit hole begins. Because what Daniel did in our kitchen here in Jerusalem might be perfectly legal, but if he were in a different city or a different country, he could be facing serious legal repercussions. Today we are diving into the global landscape of recording consent laws. It is a world divided between one-party and two-party consent, and the nuances are enough to make your head spin.
It really is a patchwork, and I think it is important to start with the core distinction. For those who might not be familiar with the legal jargon, one-party consent means only one person involved in the conversation needs to know it is being recorded. Usually, that is the person doing the recording. Two-party consent, which is sometimes called all-party consent, means everyone involved has to agree.
Right. And here in Israel, as Daniel discovered in his research, we are a one-party consent jurisdiction. This is governed largely by the 1979 Law of Secret Monitoring. It basically says that as long as you are a participant in the conversation, you can record it without telling the other person. You are the one party giving consent.
But there are exceptions even here, right? Daniel mentioned something about civil servants or marital disputes.
Exactly. The law is rarely a blanket permission slip. In Israel, if you are a civil servant, you generally cannot record your colleagues because it is seen as damaging to the cohesion of government work. And in family court, if a recording is deemed to have been made in bad faith just to dig up dirt, a judge might toss it out. But for a tenant-landlord dispute, it is a powerful tool.
It is interesting how the law tries to balance the right to gather evidence with the right to privacy. If we look across the Atlantic to the United States, it gets even more complicated because it is handled at the state level. Federal law in the United States is one-party consent. But currently, 11 states have moved to two-party or all-party consent models.
That is right. California is the big one there. If you are in Los Angeles and you record a phone call without telling the person on the other end, you are potentially committing a crime. Other states like Florida, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania also require all-party consent. This creates a massive headache for businesses. Imagine a call center in Texas, which is one party, calling a customer in California. Which law applies?
Usually, the stricter law wins out in those scenarios, which is why almost every customer service line starts with that automated message saying, "This call may be recorded for quality and training purposes." That is not just a polite heads up. It is a legal shield to ensure they have consent from everyone involved, regardless of where they are sitting.
It is a fascinating bit of legal theater. By staying on the line after hearing that message, you are giving what the courts call implied consent. You were warned, you did not hang up, therefore you agreed. It is a very efficient way to bypass the two-party consent requirement.
But let us look at the other side of the spectrum. Germany is famous for having some of the strictest privacy laws in the world. Herman, I know you were looking into Section 201 of the German Criminal Code.
Oh, it is intense, Korn. In Germany, the privacy of the spoken word is considered almost sacred. Under paragraph 211, recording a private conversation without the consent of everyone involved is not just a civil matter. It can be a criminal offense punishable by up to 3 years in prison or a significant fine. They do not mess around.
Why is that? What is the historical context there?
Well, you have to look at Germany's history in the 20th century. Between the Gestapo and the Stasi, the German people have a very deep, very justified cultural trauma regarding surveillance and the state or your neighbors listening in on your private life. After the reunification, they were incredibly proactive about enshrining the right to private communication. It is about protecting the free development of personality. If you think you are being recorded, you will not speak freely.
That is a profound point. It is the observer effect, but for social interaction. If we know we are being recorded, we perform rather than communicate. But it creates a real problem for people like Daniel, who are trying to hold someone accountable. In Germany, Daniel's recording might not only be inadmissible, but it could actually get him prosecuted.
Exactly. And even in the United Kingdom, it is a bit of a middle ground. For individuals, you can generally record a conversation for your own private use under what they call the domestic use exemption. But the moment you try to share that recording with a third party or try to use it as evidence, you run into the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, and other privacy laws.
We should also mention our neighbors to the north and south. Canada follows the one-party rule under Section 184 of their criminal code. But Australia is a real mix. It varies by state there. In New South Wales or Victoria, you generally need all-party consent for private conversations, while in other territories, the rules are more relaxed. It really is a global minefield.
It really is. And this is where the misconception busting comes in. A lot of people think that if they are in a public place like a park or a sidewalk, all recording laws go out the window. But that is not entirely true, is it?
No, not at all. There is a huge difference between taking a photo of a crowd and recording a specific, private conversation between two people sitting on a bench. The legal standard in many places is the reasonable expectation of privacy. If you are whispering to someone in a corner of a quiet library, you have a reasonable expectation that your words are not being recorded. If you are shouting in the middle of Times Square, you probably do not.
I love that phrase, reasonable expectation of privacy. It is the hinge upon which so many court cases swing. It reminds me of our discussion back in episode 308 about digital stone carving. Audio is so visceral. A transcript of a landlord saying, "I will fix the roof," is one thing. Hearing the tone of his voice, the confidence, the dismissiveness that carries a weight that text just cannot match.
It really does. And speaking of the medium, Daniel mentioned he was looking for a new digital voice recorder, a dedicated device, and he was surprised to find that the market is mostly dominated by what he called spy shops and private investigators now.
Which brings up an interesting ethical question. If the law says you can record, does that mean you should do it covertly? Daniel tucked his phone into his pocket with the microphone facing up. That is a tactical move. But does that erode the trust in our daily interactions?
That is the second order effect I worry about. If we move toward a world where every conversation is recorded by default, just in case someone lies later, we lose something vital. We lose the ability to have a messy, informal, off-the-record exchange. Everything becomes a deposition.
But on the other hand, look at the power dynamic in Daniel's situation. He is a tenant. The landlord has the property, the money, and the power. The recording is a way for the less powerful party to protect themselves against gaslighting. When the landlord sends an email saying, "I never said I would fix that," the recording is the only thing standing between Daniel and a very moldy ceiling.
It is a form of digital self-defense, and we are seeing this play out in the workplace too. In many jurisdictions, employees are starting to record meetings with human resources or their managers, especially when they sense a layoff is coming.
And companies are terrified of it. I have seen employment contracts lately that specifically forbid the use of recording devices. Of course, whether those clauses are actually enforceable in a one-party consent state is a matter of ongoing debate. Some courts have ruled that a company policy cannot override a statutory right to record a conversation you are part of.
Let us talk about the technology for a second, because it is moving faster than the law. We now have AI tools that can sit in on a Zoom call, record it, transcribe it, and summarize it. Most of these tools, like Otter or Fireflies, will announce themselves when they join. They will say, "Otter A, I is now recording this meeting."
That is the digital equivalent of the customer service warning. But what about the tools that do not announce themselves? There are browser extensions now that can record audio from a tab without any notification. If you are in a two-party state like California and you use one of those on a call with someone in another two-party state, you are technically breaking the law.
It is a total minefield, and it gets even weirder when you consider international calls. If I am in Jerusalem, a one-party jurisdiction, and I call you while you are on vacation in Berlin, which is a very strict all-party jurisdiction, whose law applies?
Most legal experts suggest that the law of the place where the recording is being made is the primary concern. But if you ever try to use that recording in a German court, you are going to have a very bad time. The internet has basically made every local law a potential international incident.
It is a bit like the rail traffic management we discussed in episode 307. You have these different systems, different gauges, different rules, all trying to connect. But instead of trains, it is our private conversations.
That is a great analogy, Korn. And just like the railways, when the systems do not match, you get a derailment. I think one of the biggest misconceptions people have is about the difference between recording someone and eavesdropping.
Right. Eavesdropping is a zero-party consent situation. That is what the wiretapping laws were originally designed to stop. That is when a third party, like the government or a nosy neighbor, listens in on a conversation they are not part of. That is illegal almost everywhere without a warrant.
Exactly. The one-party and two-party debate only applies when you are actually a participant in the conversation. If Daniel had put a microphone in the landlord's office and then left the room, that would be a serious crime in Israel and almost anywhere else. That is classic wiretapping.
So, for our listeners who might be in a situation similar to Daniel's, what are the practical takeaways? Because this isn't just academic. It affects your rights as a tenant, an employee, and a citizen.
The first step is to know your local law. And do not just assume, look it up. Search for your state or country and the phrase, recording consent laws. If you are in a two-party state, you must get permission. A simple, hey, do you mind if I record this so I do not miss any details, usually works.
And if they say no, you can still take incredibly detailed notes. Contemporaneous notes written during or immediately after a conversation are often given significant weight in court, even if they are not as definitive as an audio recording.
That is a great point. And if you are in a one-party state, like we are here in Jerusalem, you have that tool in your pocket. But use it wisely. Recording every single interaction can make you seem paranoid. Save it for the situations where there is a clear dispute or a risk of dishonesty.
Also, consider the platform. If you are recording a call on an iPhone, Apple has historically made it very difficult to do so natively to avoid legal liability. You usually have to use a third-party app. Android has been a bit more open, but even they have been tightening the screws lately to comply with local regulations.
It is becoming a cat-and-mouse game. In a world of wearable tech, like smart glasses or watches, is the expectation of privacy slowly dying? If I am wearing a pair of smart glasses, should you assume I am recording you?
Some people would say yes. We are moving toward a total surveillance society. But I think the law will continue to push back. We see this with the GDPR in Europe. They are taking a very firm stand that your data, including your voice, belongs to you. You have the right to be forgotten. How do you exercise that right if someone has a recording of you from 10 years ago stored on a hard drive?
That is a massive second-order effect. The permanence of digital audio is terrifying. In the past, a conversation was ephemeral. Now, a heated argument you had in your 20s can be played back to you when you are 40. It changes the nature of forgiveness and growth.
It really does. But for Daniel right now, that recording is a lifeline. It is the difference between having a dry bedroom and a mold-infested one. It is about accountability.
And those lines are moving. We are seeing new legislation proposed all the time. In the United States, there have been several attempts to pass a federal two-party consent law, but they usually stall out because of opposition from law enforcement and investigative journalists.
Journalists are a huge part of this. Imagine if a whistleblower could not record a corrupt official because they were in a two-party state. The public interest often clashes with individual privacy rights.
Most states with two-party laws have an exception for recording crimes in progress. If someone is threatening you or demanding a bribe, you can usually record that even without their consent, because the court recognizes that the crime outweighs the privacy right. But again, that is a narrow exception.
It is all about the context. I am curious, Herman. Do you think we will ever see a global standard?
I would love to say yes, but I doubt it. Privacy is so deeply tied to cultural values. The American focus on individual liberty is very different from the German focus on the sanctity of the private sphere. I think we are stuck with the patchwork for the foreseeable future.
Which means the burden is on us, the citizens, to be aware. We have to be our own legal researchers. If you've been listening to us for a while and you find these deep dives helpful, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious minds find the show.
It really does. And if you want to get in touch, maybe tell us about your own experiences with recording laws or landlord horror stories, you can find the contact form at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We are also on Spotify, of course, and you can find the RSS feed on the site if you want to subscribe directly.
I am just glad Daniel had his phone ready. It is a reminder that in the digital age, your best defense is often a well-placed microphone and a basic understanding of the 1979 law of secret monitoring.
Or whatever the local equivalent is. Do not go recording people in Berlin just because we said it was okay in Jerusalem. Know your jurisdiction.
Well, this has been a fascinating journey through the legalities of the spoken word. Thanks for diving into this with me, Herman.
Always, Korn. And thanks to all of you for listening to My Weird Prompts. We will be back next week with another deep dive into whatever is on Daniel's mind.
Until then, stay curious and maybe keep your phone handy.
But check the law first. Bye, everyone.
Take care. One last thing, Herman. Did Daniel ever get that roof fixed?
Last I heard, the landlord saw the recording, or at least heard about it, and suddenly a repair crew showed up the next morning. It is amazing how a little bit of audio can motivate people.
The power of the record button. Truly a modern marvel. All right, for real this time, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, and don't forget that review at myweirdprompts.com.
Talk soon. Take care.
Herman Poppleberry, signing off.
And Korn, stay dry out there.
Especially you, Daniel. Bye.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.